Hi, everybody, and welcome to So What Happens Next. As always, I am one of your hosts, Thomas.
I'm Amber.
And this week, we have a little bit different episode today, but we're going to be going over the movie Moonlight from 2016. As I just mentioned, this episode is a little bit different. I recently built a new computer that is supposed to be the workstation for our whole show, and in doing so, I guess some of the data got lost in the transfer of files. So we had started up this episode, we went to watch it, and then poof, the first half. So it kind of stinks, but we watched this movie and I guess, I mean, I don't know how you feel, Amber, but when this was the first time for me watching it. And you had mentioned that you had seen it before, but you couldn't really remember everything that happened in it, right? Yeah.
Again, this was back in 2016 when it first came out. And so this was the second time that I had seen the movie.
Okay.
Since then.
And I guess to me watching this for the first time, I was I don't want to, I mean, we could have very well done what a lot of people do and just sort of not, well, it's gone, sucks to suck, but we're not gonna be talking about this. But this movie talks about a lot.
It does.
And I feel like it would be a huge disservice to this movie and so many different communities that it represents to just ignore that we were gonna even attempt to do it. And yeah. So this week we're gonna kind of just sit and just talk about, from the top of the show, we're just gonna talk about this movie. We apologize. It's different than our usual deal, and you don't get to hear what we thought was going to happen and what we didn't. But personally, I don't want to fake it just for you guys. And I mean, I think that we should still talk about this movie to the best of our ability. So let's jump into this movie. Oscar winner from Oscars 2017 winner Moonlight from 2016. So for those of you who haven't seen this movie, it's Oscar winner from 2017. The movie came out in 2016, for those of you, I guess, who are not 100% sure how the Oscars work. It's the sort of infamous Oscar season where Steve Harvey said La La Land won, and then it was kind of an, oh shit, never mind, Moonlight won. I haven't seen La La Land, but after watching this, and just from what I know from a very cursory knowledge of La La Land, this definitely should have won over a musical about Hollywood.
Yeah.
But, so this movie is a coming-of-age story told in three parts about a young man named Chiron, who is a homosexual African-American guy who you get sort of three quick slices of his life. Once when he's a little kid, titled Little, is sort of his nickname growing up. Once when he's in high school, and then the final third of this movie where he is an adult. And through each one of these are kind of seeing the different circumstances that make him ultimately into the man he is by the time the movie's over. So in the beginning, he's getting bullied a lot. He's getting called. And also, again, I want to say at the top of the show, we're not going to be trying to use a lot of language and stuff like that. Trigger warning, I guess, for those of you in different communities. This movie has a lot of language that I think it uses in a way to sort of make its point. But, just to let you know, there may be language in here that might make you upset. I don't mean it in an offensive way. Neither of us do. If we say it, it's just us quoting the movie. Just want to get that squared away right now. But anyway, a lot of these kids are calling him faggot and things like that. And he doesn't know what that even means at the very beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
They're constantly trying to beat him up. He meets Mahershala Ali's character, who, kind of is a pseudo father figure to him, but he's also a drug dealer. You've got his mom who does crack and things all these hard drugs.
Yeah.
You kind of see his life isn't great And you also see, like, the beginnings of this kind of question of, like, how do I know I'm gay? You get the next bit is, you know, him in high school where he sort of has, you know, a sexual encounter with his friend who you saw in the beginning. The two of those guys are on the beach. They kind of have this encounter. And then next thing you know, the guy he was with beats the shit out of him. Dude loses it on a bully that made him do it, smashes him with a chair and gets arrested. And it's just, you know, that happens. Next thing is the final third of this movie. To quickly recap it all, is he's kind of like he's clearly a drug dealer. He's just like Mahershala Ali's character from the beginning of the movie. And, you know, he's, you know, that gangster guy dealing drugs. And the guy, Kevin, I believe is his name, who he had the encounter with, you know, they basically, like, have a sexual encounter on a beach, calls him up. And out of the blue, and is like, hey, you know, thinking about you, why don't you come down and visit? And the movie sort of ends where they are just being romantically physical with each other, is the only way I could really put it.
Yeah. He's like comforting him.
Right, because, you know, Chiron, our main character, sort of is like, you know, no man's ever touched me since you. And it's just, you know, they both, clearly it's insinuated, like, share a night together again as adults, but it's not shown. And that, we'll talk about it a little bit later when
we because he glimpses back. It kind of comes all the way around to where it comes back to Little, which is like the first part of the movie, right? Where he's staring at the beach and you get that whole saying, in the moonlight a black boy looks blue, or you know,
but we'll talk about that when we get there. So, Amber, let's just open it up. So, what for you really stood out more the second round?
I think it was the same thing that stood out to me when I first watched it, which was how emotional it is. Mm. And maybe it's just because, as like a black woman, there's a lot of layers to it, a lot of things that you don't necessarily get to see on TV or through other movies and how they portray black individuals. Like, this one was a lot of different layers, and not just like, oh, I'm a black person, you know, living in a pretty poor community. Yeah. This movie does take place in Liberty City, Miami.
Not to be confused with the Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
Setting, which I have to admit, up until this, when he's like, oh, you're from Liberty City, I was just like, wait, that's a real place? That's
I didn't realize that either. But
no, I had to look it up.
That's
definitely a real place.
So. Yeah.
Sorry to any listeners in Liberty City, Miami. I thought it was like a GTA reference, but okay.
Yeah. But anyways, it wasn't just going over, you know, issues with that. It was also like the character had to also confront like his sexuality, which is not something like they don't, like, it's not something that's talked about in the black community.
Mm-hmm.
It's starting to get there now because of like, you know, Pride Month and things like that. And then also, I just think this issue of not necessarily, I know we talked about this initially, but like the black on black crime or black on black violence, and how we see a little bit of that, but it's not really a thing. Like, it's not in the same way, but it's still like, it still affects that like character.
Yeah.
Right? Because he's different from everybody else. And in that way, he's kind of almost like isolated just from everybody else because they don't understand him. And yet he's like one of their own. So
yeah,
it really added to like the emotional aspect of the film.
And that was the thing I think that really kept this movie going for me. Not that it was bad, but like it doesn't tell you a lot. It doesn't even really show you a lot. This movie was very emotional, I can't even explain how it made you feel that emotion, because a lot of the heavy emotional moments, I mean, you know, this is another movie, I guess, that's like carried by its actors, as I've said in movies past, or, you know, maybe that doesn't make sense, but it's how all movies are supposed to be. But for instance, when you get to part two of this movie, Mahershala Ali's character's dead. And everyone just references, like, his funeral. And they're just like, yeah, I haven't seen him since the funeral. And it's just like, oh shit, he's dead. We're not even like talking about this in the sense of like it just happened, or the opening of this sequence is, you know, a funeral or him getting shot. It's like he's been dead for at least 4 years, and we're all just, it's a nice marker for time. And it's just really weird because this movie does so many things like that, or when he goes to prison or juvie and then other stuff happens to him afterwards. And the third part that he explains is that's how we get this information. Other movies show you this shit because that's like part of the movie. Or if they don't.
Yeah, but is it really important? Because in some of those other movies, it's drawn out.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't necessarily need to show it unless it's like it has a significant impact.
And so that's on what him, I liked about for this, like, yeah.
You know, the funeral, he may have just died because of other, like, not getting shot or anything like that, but like health problems or something like that.
No, and that's actually kind of a slip on me, as I'm assuming he got shot because, frankly, he's a
black man. Yeah, but that's what we always assume, right?
And
that's the problem. But it could have just been natural causes.
Right, he could have just had a heart attack or something.
Yeah, and then him just going to juvie, there's nothing significant about that, because if you look at the way our system is right now, it doesn't really help anybody.
Oh, well, I meant because he explains when he went to juvie, he met a guy who put him on the street and then he rose up through the...
Yeah, that's true.
That's the part I meant. I'm sorry about that. I don't mean like, oh, he's in juvie, now he's a criminal for life. I just mean...
But I think the film does a good job of just... Because we expect something big to happen, like, oh, he met this guy in prison who like changed his life.
Right.
And, you know, basically stopped the cycle. But this movie does a great job of showing the cycle doesn't stop. Like, it doesn't have this, like, oh, all of a sudden he becomes, like, a better person. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have that at all.
And that's the interesting thing, and that's what I was going to say, is I like how this movie, to me, when you don't show something and you say it happened off screen, I mean, there's been a lot of movies that have been coming out lately where they're just like, look at all this shit. Oh, by the way, this happened in some other medium. And it's just like, well, damn, that would have been cool to see. I guess it's fine. But this movie takes that gamble of not showing you those things and just telling you it happened, and it pays off. I mean, this movie, I don't want my comment to be misunderstood here, is it is by no means diminished in not showing you Mahershala Ali's character's funeral or him dying or Chiron in prison. Like, it's not diminished in any way from those. If anything, the way this is executed is, like, it's great that it happens. If I was a writer on this, would I have wanted to, like, show the funeral? Maybe, because I think it could have given a little bit weight, but it would have been, like, a shot of people at a funeral, maybe his name on a tombstone, and then it would move on with the rest of the high school sequence. But that's maybe just me being nitpicky. This movie does such a great job by, like, making everything in the world around Chiron represent his emotions and how he feels. And the actor barely talks the actors, I should say, that play him at the three stages of his life barely speak, for Christ's sake. And yet, I'm, like, glued to this, you know, almost 2-hour movie the whole time, like, feeling what this kid's feeling, at least to the best of my abilities. And it's amazing that it can do that, because there are some things about this movie I didn't like. Cinematically, I think some of the camera work was a little funky, and maybe, I don't know, prescription medicine commercials have ruined it for me, but a lot of the flares and quick zooms and, you know, panning around really close to people was like, there were times I was legit like, I am invested in everything about this scene except for the camera work, and it makes me feel like I'm watching a commercial about what's happening, and it's weird. But then other things, like, there's just my favorite shot of this movie as far as cinematography goes is in part 3, the very beginning, Chiron sitting in like a car waiting for, I guess, like some dealer that's working under him to get in, and guy walks up to the car, he opens the door, and when he opens the door, the camera's clearly like, you don't realize it. You think of it's just a shot through the window at Chiron. He opens the door and the camera moves as if mounted on the door and then moves back. And it's not some shitty GoPro thing like in the second Hobbit movie where they stuck a GoPro on a rock and threw it down a river or whatever the hell was. And it's like nice and smooth and mm-hmm. It's great. And so much of this movie it's like the camera work is either awesome or it was like a commercial.
Yeah.
And when it was awesome, it had those, and it's, I haven't seen 1917 and stuff, but it's like, it had that whole feel of like so much of this is one shot going for a really long time and we're moving around and then it would, you know, cut to the next scene. And it's really cool, like just really cool how they did that. And I think there's so much cinematically that is done in this movie to where the actors are clearly giving it an all, and like you can see it, they're acting like with their faces and with their reactions more than their words, and more than like even some of the music. It doesn't even like necessarily lend itself, like the music has the nice symphonic moments and things, but for a lot of the really hard emotional scenes in this movie, there's not music, or it's just so low key I don't remember it being there. And I think this movie just does a brilliant job with sort of making you, the viewer, feel what Chiron is feeling. And also at the same time, like, well, I mean, let's talk about the people in Chiron's life. I mean, first up is kind of his mom, right? Like, she's not the best mom in the world.
She's actually, like, he hates her.
Yeah, and it's sort of a weird resentment, right? Because she's kind of weirdly psychologically abusive to him, I guess you could say. So his mother is, like, addicted to crack, and we kind of watch her descent and rise as this movie goes on, right?
Which is, like, nice, I guess, in some way.
Well, it's like the beginning of the movie, she's clearly working as a nurse or something in some kind of medical field. When Chiron is a kid and she works so much and he's really self-sufficient, you know,
because she's absent.
Right. Yeah. She's like never around to the point where he doesn't come home for a whole night. And she's like, you got to come home when you're supposed to come home, Chiron, like, come on. And I'm just like, yo. And I mean, I'm a white guy. So obviously my experience is going to be very different than the one of this movie, but I can only imagine, like, if I was that young and I didn't come home for a whole night, like, my parents would have flipped they would have flipped their lid, like.
But that was the only point, I think, where she said something about, like, his whereabouts. Because after that, like, she no longer cares, right? Because she's kind of diving, like, headfirst into this descent into, like, you know, drugs.
Well, she's like clearly prostituting herself. To the point where
she's not even home, like when he's home. Right. So
or even when she is home, she's not there.
Yeah.
You know, like she's either high or she's, because I'm, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, like I'm pretty sure like she's prostituting herself, right? Like that is a thing that's happening in this movie. Okay. But yeah, she's doing that. I mean, he walks in on that like transaction.
Yeah.
And she gets mad and like storms off to the bedroom with this rando dude.
Yeah.
Who later, like, buys her drugs. And it's just kind of like, that character, you watch her sort of start this descent, like you say. When we get to the high school part, she's, like, basically stealing money from Chiron out of his own pocket right in front of him to go buy drugs. And she's, like, you know, tweaking out and seriously not doing good and... I don't know.
And she even gets confronted by Juan.
So at the beginning, that's what I was going to get to. Is we do have that confrontation with Juan, Mahershala Ali's character. And I liked this. I really liked how they showed sort of the irony in that interaction, you know, where he. It's like nobody in this scenario can be the good guy. Even though, I mean, I don't know, maybe me watching it, I was like, if I was Chiron and I had to choose between either of these people to be my parent, I'd rather take Mahershala Ali's character, Juan, over the mom.
Yeah.
Because she's, like, Juan is not exactly a great person. The dude's, like, dealing hardcore drugs on the street, you know. But he actually shows, like, care towards Chiron, even to the point where he's, like, telling him, like, if you're gay, that's fine. You know, like, don't let anybody call you a faggot, things like that. Whereas the mom is just kind of, like, trying to hide it from him and act like it doesn't exist. And then she's also, like, on crack and has a huge problem there that she needs help with. And I guess like that scene is just, that is one of, to me, one of the more powerful scenes in the movie, because you could see on Juan's face, like he's super frustrated because like he can't not do what he's doing. Otherwise he has nothing.
And that's like a problem.
Because, and that's a huge problem.
Yeah. Because just because he's been, you know, nice to this kid, it's like he is also part of the problem too. Mm-hmm. Like he's giving the mom the drugs.
Yeah, I didn't mention that. I forgot to mention that. Like he is the one selling her drugs.
Yeah.
Which she calls him out on, which...
And then, are you going to raise him? And he stays pretty silent when she asks him that question. Like, are you going to raise him?
Yeah.
And as a drug dealer, like, no. Like, yeah, I can look after him from time to time, but am I going to take on the responsibility to, like, actually raise him up? And he was quiet.
Mm-hmm. And then... Again, makes me feel like, though, even though he's a drug dealer and that's like the scary man or whatever, Juan's the better parent, because he's like, to me, and I don't know, I want to hear your thoughts on this too, because to me, when he's silent, that's him saying, I'm a drug dealer. I'm not going to bring a kid into this, like a kid being involved in this. This is not a place for a kid to be.
No.
So, no, I'm not going to raise your kid. Because clearly he cares a lot. To me, he cares a lot about Chiron. Him and his wife, girlfriend, Teresa.
Yeah.
They care a lot about Chiron.
Yeah.
But it's very clear, like, Chiron's not moving out of his mom's house anytime soon.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about that, though? Like, I mean, that was my interpretation. I could be way off.
No, I think it... could probably stem from like frustration, because he can't like not do his job, basically.
Right.
Like this is like, that's his job, is to provide a service, and he can't just stop just because of one kid.
True.
And I mean, that's just kind of how I like took it, because again, his livelihood would also change if he had to actually become like a father figure to him. So not saying that makes him like bad or anything, but he just has to look out for like his interests, you know?
Right.
Which is why, and maybe it's just because this movie makes the mom look like a villain.
Oh, it does. At least in the beginning of the movie, villain. It does.
But she also, like, why do we always go to the woman, right? To, oh, your kid's not behaving, why don't you raise him right?
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. Like, why do we always look to the women to, like, you know, take up that responsibility?
Well, I'd say at least in this movie, it's just because of the setting. I mean, there is no father.
Gotcha.
He's, like, not there.
Yeah.
But you make a great point. Is like, how come we're, like...
But, I mean, especially for African-American women who are, like, the most, like, disrespected women.
Right.
Alongside, like, Native American women.
Well, that's another thing, too, is you get... This movie does a lot of juxtaposition, though, right? It's like you get, like, Teresa kind of playing the mom he doesn't have.
Yeah.
Even, especially when he's in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'd think Juan's dead now by this point. Why does she care?
Yeah, exactly.
But he's still able to go over there. And he's able to stay the night anytime. I mean, it's... I don't know about you, but, like, this movie had me sitting there waiting for Teresa, or at the beginning of it, Juan, to be like, just come with, live with me now.
Yeah, and I kind of wonder, like, why they didn't do that. Like, that, those are the scenes
fantasy.
That I was kind of, like, waiting for, I guess, and, like, his silence was kind of, like, I don't know, it turned me the wrong way, I guess.
I think that's because that's the reality. Or, I'm sorry, what we saw is the reality. What we wanted was the fantasy.
Yeah.
How often, like, think about it. Like, you see a kid, parents are hardcore on drugs. Your first instinct, and it's, you know,
yeah, like,
sad.
It's not like it's a Matilda story where Matilda, you know, she comes from a horrible family.
Right.
And she gets adopted by the nice teacher who happens to have a house, who happens to have a good job. Like,
right.
It's, yeah, it's pure fantasy. You're
We're
right.
Not, yeah. We're not watching Matilda or Little Orphan Annie. We're watching Moonlight. And the reality is, you know, you see a kid in this situation, your gut instinct is not, I am going to adopt this kid and take this kid away from his family. One, you as an individual probably do not have the right to just take a kid away from his mom. there are federal institutions that deal with that. You can report it. But straight up, I mean, isn't that the whole feel-good story you always see on the internet? Is like, person found kid who was like, that yeah. guy, and they adopted him. They're such a hero. And mm-hmm. it's like, if everyone's instinct was to do this, then it wouldn't be that heroic, would yeah. it? This is the reality, I think, because it's like, you see there's a problem, you want to do what you can to help, but you want to take on all the responsibilities of raising a kid? That's a lot.
And yeah. Especially when you're doing that. Something illegal.
Yeah, not to mention the fact that you're, I mean, the added layer that this guy's a drug dealer, and it's yeah. like, oh shit, you know, at best, you kind of steal this kid and nobody cares, you know, legally adopting him. I mean, it's, yeah. It's my understanding
adopting is difficult. If you get caught, who's going to continue to look right. after that kid?
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that as a whole, though, the juxtaposition you get between Teresa and the mom, or even like Kevin and Chiron, is really what makes the emotional elements of this movie, I think, hit hard. Because Kevin, to me, at least in the high school sequence, seemed more well off than Chiron, for sure.
Yeah.
But not like a piece of shit like the bullies were. And you kind of get the fantasy with Chiron, or with Kevin, when you think about it, now that we're bringing it up. I didn't think about it until just now. But, well, it, correct me if I'm wrong, like his story was he goes to jail, too, for what he insinuates to be just a bullshit charge.
Yeah.
And it's right after he had a kid. And just being away from that kid for as long as he was, like, that set him straight.
Yeah.
He kind of goes to say, like, that set his ass straight. He's like, I'm not fucking around with the streets no more. He works in, like, a diner as a cook. And he's divorced from his wife. But, you know, they still keep it together for their kid and stuff like that. And it's kind of the fantasy story of the life that Chiron never had the opportunity to live. And it's sort of like, that's your feel-good movie. The story we just saw, because that's pretty much the end of the movie.
Yeah.
The end of the movie pretty much is in the diner and stuff. The whole thing with Chiron, you watch his life and it's just like, there's your reality. Like, this is the more common than not story, I guess.
Yeah.
With the added layer of just, like, this dude is also dealing with the fact that he's gay.
Yeah.
For, like, his whole life, you know? And you feel how awkward he feels. Like, when...
Yeah, and it doesn't go with his personality either, nor does it go with his physical appearance. Because, right. like, in the third part, you were just like, man, this guy is jacked.
Oh, yeah, no, I...
like, you'd have no clue.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because prior to that, he's, like, skinny. He's, like, a tiny little kid.
Exactly, in the first two parts. Again, like, hence the nickname, Little.
Little, yeah.
Like, in every aspect.
Right. He's little in every way until the third part where he goes by the nickname Black.
Yeah. And I think that says something, yeah. right? That we often, you know, masculinize Black men.
Yeah. And I mean, that, you know, that's a good point.
We don't give them any room to be vulnerable to, because he doesn't, again, he doesn't talk like a lot, like mm-hmm. throughout the film. Like he just, if anything, he does not talk when people are like talking to him.
Yeah.
And he's very rigid and like just everything about like his personality, it's just like very closed off.
Right.
And I think that's how like society makes out men like that to be.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, it's something, the whole wearing a mask of masculinity is something I didn't even think about till just now, but you're absolutely on point, I think, with that, mm-hmm. because the first two sequences of this movie, I mean, even the very beginning, when they're little kids, Kevin tells him you can't let these guys, like, beat you down and stuff like that. You know, if you just let them beat you up, they're going to think you're weak. And he's like, yeah. I'm not weak. And they're like, yeah, but if you don't do anything about it, everyone's going to think you are.
Yeah.
And, you know, this goes on until he's in high school, and finally he gets the shit beat snaps. Out of him. And he snaps. He picks up a chair and smashes the bully over the head with
yeah.
it. I mean, I don't know what that chair was made out of, but it looked like fucking wood.
Yeah.
And that would... That kid just...
And it broke,
too. It broke over yeah. his head. That kid is on the ground, just, like, kind of writhing. And yeah. I'm like, did he kill this guy? Like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I mean, you see it coming when he's like storming down the hall. Like, he's gonna do something, but damn. And then then it pretty much he gets arrested and then hard cut into, well, not hard cut, but you cut into part three where he is this gangster guy who is like jacked. I mean, this dude is shredded. He's working out fucking hardcore in his home, and he's like,
yeah, and he's got like the gold teeth, and even Kevin says like, "What are you doing, man? Like, why do you? That's not you."
But that's the great, another great juxtaposition. This movie is Kevin is someone who's known him his whole life. All the other people in Atlanta where he's now living, look at Chiron and they're just like, that's who he is. He's this built black guy. And like, that's the other thing is like, he's in the car with the guy, I guess like one of his drug dealers or something. Yeah. Right. And he's like, where's all the hoes at or something to that effect. And you can, I just love the three guys. They're the young men who they got to play Chiron, because each one of them, it's like seamless. At no point was I like, oh man, this guy's not doing Chiron as good as the other. Like, I'm just like, it felt like I was watching, you know, the same person growing up. Mm-hmm. And you see that like twang of I'm awkwardly answering this question with like an I don't know.
Yeah.
And then it goes on and it's just like, wow. Like, the work that these actors put into the movie is fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, even the arc with the mom, where he goes and he meets her in the third part, and they have this kind of emotional moment where she's now, I guess, at a rehab center.
Yeah.
And she's like living there and working there, and they kind of let her stay there for as long as she's working there. So she figures it's, you know, keeps her out of trouble and she can help people. And you, like, again, there's an off-screen arc that's happening, and it's such an interesting way to look at this guy's life through a single keyhole, so to speak. Like, you're just looking at everything that happens directly to Chiron in these three pieces. But at the same time, in the background, his mom is, like, getting help.
Yeah.
And, like, being a better person. She has a whole emotional thing with her. He still, like, clearly has problems with her, but they kind of seem to start to get over it by the end of this conversation, which is great. And I think that is sort of the running theme of the third part, is kind of tying up all the loose ends and, like, getting it to be something rounded off.
Yeah.
Which sort of leads me to the ending. And I think this goes back to your point about masculinity, right? So the one thing they do show, the final shot of this movie, after Chiron tells Kevin, you know, no other man's ever touched me besides you that one time, they kind of smile and it's like clearly going to get hot and steamy in there. But the next shot, it's not happening. It's Kevin just holding Chiron and like caressing his head.
Yeah.
That's it. They're clothed, they're just sitting there, you know, we're not getting like, oh, here's a sex scene or something like that. Yeah. And I think if we did, it would really,
I think it would ruin the movie.
I think if the movie was longer, then you could do both. But if you were going to end it on that, I feel like it would cheapen it. Cause like, I don't know. And it got me off guard. Like when we watched it, I sat there like the scene ended and the credits are rolling. And my first instinct was to be like, that's it? Like, what? Like, the rest of this movie was, like, great. And then, like, this thing happened, and it just felt like it wasn't over. And, you know, I kind of sat and I thought about it for a while, and thinking about it now, it's not over because we're watching this guy's life. We're not watching the death of Chiron, the life and death of Chiron. We're watching just these three pieces of his life. The third piece didn't happen to be the part where it ended. So why would we watch him die? Or why would we watch some kind of finality take place?
Yeah. You know?
His life keeps going.
I mean,
there
was some finality to it. I mean, right?
Well, sure.
He found some peace. He finally embraced, like, who he is.
Right. But I think it kind of goes with my point about the fantasy stuff, right? Because the way I see it is, he's getting the thing that he wanted. He's getting to be who he is, I guess I should say, with Kevin. And that's great. But I think it's that not everything is this Disney princess wedding stuff, you know?
Yeah.
You don't get, okay, they're together. Now they're going to go get married and live happy lives and help raise Kevin's son together. And it's like, no, it's just this is that moment they have. This is about the masculinity that he's been like having to cover himself up with, and this like toxic masculinity really, and all this other stuff, to where he finally is able to just be little, be Chiron, be anything but black in the sense of his nickname, mm-hmm. not as a person, but like, and he's able to do that with Kevin, and he's never really been able to do that with anyone other than Juan and Teresa.
Yeah.
And even then with Teresa, he's still not. They really go out of your way to show that he's still not cool with, like, the mother figure.
Yeah.
Which is enough. I mean, there's so many. The more we talk about them, I'm like, oh, man, there's so much in this movie, like, that I really didn't catch on the first watch.
Yeah.
But I guess in, like, a broader sense, like, as a movie, I keep saying it, but the performances are great. I mean, most of this cast, aside from the kids and the high school people and then the adults, are all playing the same person. So like the mom is the mom is the yeah. mom throughout the whole movie, and they do a good job like making her look older. They do a good job making like, these actors and actresses do a great job making themselves act like more mature versions of the people that they were.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes into the kids and stuff too, is it's just like, I believe that high school Chiron is little that I saw at the beginning of this movie. Like, I buy it. I'm totally into it. It's there. It's just like a really, I thought that the performances in this movie were fantastic.
Yeah.
So all that stuff kind of being said, Amber, what about this movie didn't you like? Because I got to say, like, the reviews for this movie vary across the board depending on what platform you're on, right? You have like Metacritic giving it like a 99, but then, you know, others giving it like 3.5 stars and things like that. Right? You know, IMDb giving it 74 out of 100. And also it's IMDb. I have yet to find a movie we've done on this show that breaks the 80% barrier. So like IMDb ratings are kind of garbage, but it's sort of wide across the board. So like, what things did you maybe not like about this movie?
I think there were a couple plot holes like in the movie that they just kind of dropped the ball on.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like anything significant, but it was just like little things like how did we get from here to like here? Like,
yeah,
I can't think of anyone at this time, but
I think
like,
the one that stands out to me is, how did Kevin have Chiron's phone number?
Okay, yes, that was the one that we were talking about. I was like, I know we talked about this. Yeah. So it was like, how did he know his number?
Also, how did Chiron know where Kevin works?
Yeah.
Because we saw the whole conversation.
Yeah, we did.
He hung up. We saw it from answer the call to hang up the call, and then he goes to Miami. I totally
and he just
agree
happened
you.
To find his number through someone else, I think?
I could believe friend of friend of friend, maybe. But then it goes back around to like, so did Chiron do the same thing to find Kevin's restaurant? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could pull that. Like, if I went back to my hometown, I was like, oh yeah, a friend of mine's working at some restaurant. Like, and then go strategically find other people to ask if you know where this person's working now. Like, I don't know. Guess you could creep them on Facebook, maybe, but it's a little weird. I could agree. There's a few plot holes. For me, like I've mentioned before, the camera work at some times was a little funky. Yeah, I also agree with the plot holes. There were a few things that was just kind of like, it's not that they didn't show it off screen. It's just that I don't even understand how it happened. Like, how did we get from this part to this part? In the sense of, like, how did he know his phone number? Or, like, when Chiron answers his phone, he clearly looks at his phone and then answers it and is like, look, Ma, I'll come visit sometime, and it's Kevin. And I'm just like, what made him think that was... And maybe I blinked and missed it. Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, I might have looked away to take a drink and then look back up and suddenly he's on the phone, but I could have sworn, like, he looks at his phone, sees the caller ID, answers it, talks to his mom, but Kevin's, like, talking to him. It was a strange misconception for him to have given the movie, but all in all, I think this movie does a really good job of making you kind of, like, not pay attention to those.
Yeah.
Because it needs to further the plot itself. I mean, you can't have him reconnect with Kevin if you have to spend too much damn time having Chiron figure out where Kevin works or something like that. And I think that would be my last gripe, is I think the third part's a little too short. Or it felt a little too short. It felt like not as much happened as the first two, and I kind of would have liked a little bit more. But that's just me. Amber, out of our standard 1,000 denominations, you can even do it out of 1,000 if you want to. What would you rate this movie? Honestly and objectively, Oscars and awards aside, what was the number that you would slap on this movie if you had to write up a review of it right now?
I definitely give it like a 9 out of 10.
9 out of 10? I guess it's it's probably not worth asking, but I'll do it anyway. Would you suggest everyone watch this movie?
Yeah, I think everyone does need to watch this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I would actually probably give this movie a 9 out of 10 too, because I don't feel like the things I feel like the things I didn't like about this movie at most can only take away like that one point. Because even the things like the plot holes, it's like I didn't pay attention to it. I could see it, but I was like, whatever, and kept moving until you were like, wait, are there some plot holes here? And I was like, yeah, like how do you know where to call them? And like those kinds of things. But they're not like unforgivable. You know, like the movie didn't say the entire plot, the world will be saved by this thing we didn't tell you about. It's, you know. It's not that kind of movie. But yeah, 9 out of 10. And I would definitely say, like, as someone who is not as educated as, I guess, you know, other people, or not, I guess I will say, as someone who, you know, I'm a white guy, I'm not gay, I've not lived this experience in probably any really way, shape, or form, I think everyone should watch this movie at least once, maybe twice, because I feel like there are things I definitely missed in it. Because in understanding like how other people live, you can learn how to like sympathize and see their perspective better. And I think this movie does a really good job of not just showing you like the systemic problems that we have regarding race and, you know, homosexuality and things like that. But it also shows you just kind of like, this is how a different person, different group of people are living. Like you should understand that there are people who do not live the life that you do. And in some cases like this movie, it's not always a better version. And sometimes it's a much worse version. And it's, I think this movie does a really good job of portraying that, to where you feel what this character feels despite not living that. And it does it in a way where you don't feel like, oh, thank God I'm not living that life. Like, you feel like, holy shit, this is horrible. And you feel that emotion. And I think you should definitely watch this movie if you haven't. I certainly hope we haven't ruined it for you. When we did record the first half before we did watch the movie, I think we admitted that it's really tough to actually not ruin this movie, because there's not really a lot, like we've said, that happens in it. It's very just emotion, and it's just the emotions of growing up. But yes, 9 out of 10, I think, all around the table here. A definite watch from our end. So coming up, we're going to take a little bit of a break. We're going to take about, like, you're not going to have an episode next week, but following that week, you are going to have an episode on Amber. You care to let us know what that's going to be?
Yeah, next time we'll be watching, or I guess like reviewing, Defy Bloods.
Yep. Movie by Spike Lee,
right? Yeah.
Came out this year. I think it's a Netflix movie.
Yeah.
Kind of continuing on with movies by people of color. So, next week, we're going to have no new episode for you guys, and I apologize in advance of that. Make sure no computer mishaps happen anymore to where we're losing episodes like this one, but I think that this is a happy accident that maybe gave a good episode. And then we're going to come back to you guys with Defy Bloods from 2020, directed by Spike Lee. We hope you enjoy it. We hope you enjoyed this. And in the meantime, like I said, check out our past episodes, check out our website, social media, or hey, if you want, go check out any of the movies that we have talked about in the past. If you haven't watched them by now, maybe some of them you should, maybe some of them you shouldn't. But until the Five Bloods, I, as always, am one of your hosts, Thomas.
I'm Amber.
And this is So What Happens Next.